They say done is better than perfect, and it's better late than never. So we're going to put both of those things to the test today. This is a conversation that I recorded back in April of 2021 with a wonderful guy, Craig McKay from Freedom Hypnosis. And I was to post it at that time, and I didn't, so I apologize to him, and we're going to post it now. So in the next hour, you're going to hear or listen in on a conversation that I had with Craig about hypnosis and change work and all sorts of wonderful perspective expanding things. So listen in and check it out. Today I have with me Craig McKay from Freedom Hypnosis, a hypnotist, and we were just having a chat before jumping live onto this stream, and I know this is going to go somewhere very interesting. So, Craig, thank you for jumping on and being here today.
Thank you for inviting me. Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I know we met through like the hypnosis circle and through Lori Hammond's group, and I just, you know, you seem like a really interesting guy. I want to learn a little bit more about you. So, we were talking before we started on this about like hypnosis and how it kind of like comes together or how you present it to different people. So why don't we start there in terms of like hypnosis? What does that even mean?
Hypnosis for me is about everything other than when we're 100% mindfully present. So when we're 100% here, reacting only to what is immediately happening right here and right now, then anything outside of that is a form of trance, because we can go to past remembered experience or future imagined experience. And that when we go there, past remembered or future imagined, that we place ourselves in those situations to some degree. It might not be fully associated, but to some degree, where then the result of that is there's emotional stuff that will happen here, where if you take a step back, the source of that isn't here. So then within that, motivation is a hypnotic state, because someone will place themselves at the outcome. And when they do that, they feel like, well, if I imagine myself at that goal or outcome, then that would feel good. So then the feelings of good come here and then motivate us to go in that direction. In the same way as fear. Well, when I think about that happening, there's a force that comes up to get away from that, even though it's not happening. So basically, the interesting thing is, I think that mindfulness is a right more and more popular industry teaching us to get out of trance. So why do I have to go to someone to get me out of trance? But wait, I'm not in trance. But if I'm not in trance, there's only this moment right now. Past's gone, future hasn't happened, it's just now. And often this moment can be quite dull for many of us. So our mind says, well, where do I need to go? Well, it might be okay now, but let's remember the time it wasn't, so we can prepare. Or let's think about our vacation. Remember those vacations and think about, oh, that would be fun. So when we're at work, like, or the 5 o'clock trance, right? For people at work 9 to 5, like thinking about, what's it going to be like? I can't wait till that clock's 5 o'clock. But meanwhile, it's 1. You know, so like trance is basically dissociating or disconnecting from this present and associating or connecting to something else. Stories take us there. Movies, unless you don't like them, then you're the critic and you're present just viewing it disconnected. Movies, video games, all of that, that's all about this idea that it's taking me out of here and putting me in another experience.
Interesting.
So when I came to look at it that way, trance is the norm, not the exception, to varying degrees.
So then the difference between being here and then being there or there, I guess, what's the, like, do you have any thoughts on what the utility of those different things, like those different states are? Like, why are we not here all the time or there all the time?
Because it's, if you look at it and say the primary purpose of the mind is survival. So our mind is typically prioritizing what could be a threat. And that's why I think anxiety is such an issue. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like it's not particularly valuable. Mm-hmm. I'll actually give you an example. If mm-hmm. you were coming out of years and years ago, if we were cave people, mm-hmm. if you come out of the cave in the morning, oh, a stretch. And then you look and there's like the sunrise and you're like, oh, wow, that's so nice. Let me just enjoy that. And weren't paying attention and something came along and ate you. That's not so good. Mm. So it's almost like, and I don't know if I can curse on this, but here we go. So it's almost like we can look at it and go, your mind's like, that's great, but fuck that. Like, what else is going on?
Right.
Right. Yeah. Almost like where these days people go, oh, my wealth's actually okay. My health's actually okay. Yeah. Yeah. But never mind that. This thing could happen. And you're like, wait, like, what's actually okay? What's okay right now? So it's almost about that idea that it has a greater value to our survival to just note what's okay and then look for what might not be. Yeah. So I kind of almost feel that that's what it is, because that's the priority of the mind is for you to survive your life, not to be happy. They're different. That the priority is for you to survive.
Yeah.
Happiness is down the priority list.
Yeah.
Because survival is the one that gives the foundation for everything else.
Yeah. Without that, nothing else can happen.
Without that, nothing else can happen. Like, what's the point focusing on happiness if you don't survive? Yes. So it's almost like part of it is about learning how our mind works and to give it what it needs so we can enjoy things. Where it's hard to enjoy things if our survival is being questioned. So it's almost like some of the stuff I learned recently is like this idea, there's four levels of the mind. Survival, number one. So if there's a problem there, everything above it, after it collapses. Second is avoiding pain and seeking comfort. Third is conserving energy. And if all of those are satisfied and give you the thumbs up, then we have everything else. So it's almost like if we set a goal and we don't have a big enough why. Then the mind's like, well, why would I do that? I'd have to conserve energy. I'd have to be uncomfortable. And we might not even survive it. Why would I do that? And we go, well, I guess I'm just not the kind of person that can do that. No, we just need to know how to give the mind the goal in a way that works. Like, what if our mind is a sports car and we buy that sports car and it's amazing, it gets delivered and we're in it and we're turning it on and nothing's happening. We go, this is garbage. I'm going to sell it. And someone says, I'll give you $10. And you go, well, it doesn't work. So okay, $10. And then that person has a gas tank with a gas, you know, what do you call them, jerry can with them. They put gas in it, then it works. And they go, I got the best deal ever, $10. Yeah. You needed the fuel. The machine worked fine. It just needed the right fuel. I often think it's about learning how our mind works. And the first one is to really be able to establish survival in whatever the goal is and in the moment now. If we have that, then those powerful systems of the mind that can often work against us, they calm down.
Interesting. So if I understand that correctly, then it's kind of our minds are looking for things that can threaten our survival. So thinking about potential things in the future that could harm us, or maybe things in the past that may have affected us in some way.
Yes, but an extra thing to add to that is survival isn't just defined as physically. It's mentally and emotionally and physically, but also identity too. Like when someone's going to speak on stage and they might have a panic attack, are they under physical threat? They're not. But if I get rejected, that's a threat to my identity. And some people would say that goes back to our tribal days, that if you get rejected, that means then cast out and struggling for food and shelter and protection. So that old part of our mind, which you might look and go, that's not appropriate now, is it? But remembering our life as it is now has evolved fairly recently. So like out of our years of evolution, a lot of those old systems are kind of struggling to update with where we are now. So someone could be in a boardroom having a panic attack going, oh my God, what if I get fired or something? Like it's an end event, but it isn't an end event, but it feels like it.
I guess your body's like alerting you to all these things, and it's kind of like, oh, like this feels really bad. This could be bad. So do something about it. Figure it out and just focus on that.
And actually, that's part of the solution. So typically, when someone's in that situation, imagine a movie, right? That their mind picks the worst frame of the movie and then freezes there, like pushing pause on the worst scene in the movie. Mm. And then the mind is almost like there's nothing after. And actually, if you talk to someone about fear and you're like, well, then what happens if you're on stage and people laugh? Well, that would be the end. And you go, would it though? And they're like, it feels like it. And go, well, what's 10 frames after that? What do you mean? He's like, well, what's 10 frames after that moment? Oh, well, I'm on stage and they're still laughing. Okay, what's the ending of, what happens after the credits of that movie? Oh, well, you know, I'm at home. I feel bad about it. Well, then what happens? I go to bed that, well, I don't sleep that night and go, okay, great. Then what happens? Well, the next day I'm definitely grumpy. Great, what about the day after that? Oh, well, it's not that important anymore. What about a week from now? Are you still alive? Well, yeah. It's like, is it as important then? Well, no. What about a year later? Yeah. Oh, I don't even think about it anymore. And go from that place of knowing that a year from now you'll look back and won't even care about the outcome.
Yeah.
What's different from that place of knowing you A, survive, and that B, it's not important anymore?
Yeah.
What's different there when you look back on that frame of discomfort? You go, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. So if you're looking at the cliff going, well, that's the end, of course you freak out.
Yeah.
If you're safely on the bottom looking back at it, then it's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah.
Like a plane, right? Think about this one too. If you're in a plane, right? Yeah. And the turbulence is horrific. Why is it scary?
Mm-hmm. Why is it scary? Because you think the plane is going to fall out of the sky.
Mm-hmm. So we don't know how this ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if somebody came and communicated to you in a way that you don't just think it feels nice, but you know one can accept? If someone could place a knowing inside of you that no matter what happens, you safely land on the other side, does that mean the turbulence is comfortable? Not really. But is it different, the experience, when you know, not just think, but know that you'll safely land on the other side? Does that change it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then the goal is with our fears and stuff is to finish the movie.
Hmm.
Don't get glitch in the middle, because of course it's going to feel shit. Of course it is. Like, but that's then it's always like, what's after? What's after that? Oh, but I could get fired. Right, sure. Then what? Well, I feel horrible. Yeah. Right, but then what?
Yeah.
Oh, what do you mean then? Well, then what's after that? Like, how long do you want to feel horrible? Like a week, a month? Like, what do you need? A month, great. Like a year. So a year later, what about then? And so it's almost like we touch down again.
Yeah.
So we're up in the discomfort. Like, where do we touch down again? And when that's included, then the arc of the experience is only really about discomfort, knowing we're fine at the end. Because then the worst case scenario then is discomfort.
Yeah.
Discomfort without knowing the end is terrifying.
Yeah.
Discomfort while like think about a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know you're going to be okay at the end, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
But if they're like, listen, we don't maintain this, it's not been used in 50 years, good luck. Well, that's probably going to change it.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
Or if you see bolts falling off, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the car ahead of you crashing and burning.
Yeah. As they crash, you're like, oh, hopefully I'm okay.
Yeah.
Seriously. Different. That's different. Yeah. Anyway, there's my take on some random stuff for you, Jonathan.
Oh, that's more than random. That's like gold. You make it sound so easy, you know? It's almost like just listening to that as a listener, if I'm like, okay, like that sounds great, but if I'm in the moment, what do I do? Like any quick tips there? Because I know like I'm not sure actually how you work with your clients in your hypnosis sessions and all of that, but you know, there's the usual idea of you know, putting someone into a trance and they look like they're asleep, and then you give suggestions and all that type of thing. That's kind of, I guess, in the common thought of what that experience might look like. So then thinking about it, just like, okay, you're at this moment, you know, play the movie through. How can, number one, like what's a quick way, or what's a useful way for someone to interact with their fear that someone could use right now? And then maybe I'd love to hear a little bit more about your process.
This is so much easier when I'm working with someone and it's like a specific example of it. So, so what I would say about that is to say, I'm going to offer you another wide frame here, then I'll get more specific.
Absolutely.
That your reality right now is nothing more than what you're paying attention to. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So if you're not paying attention to it, it's not included in your reality consciously?
Yeah, for all intents and purposes.
Sure. So it becomes, number one, becomes to shift the what are actually, let me go even broader. Mm. Everything that people have as a problem comes down to one thing: their habits of attention. They're used to looking at certain things through a certain lens and that's creating a certain experience. If we change the lens that we're, if we change what we're looking at, the experience changes. Or even if we change the lens that we're looking at that thing through, the experience changes. Right. So a question can be, we have attention shifting questions. Like, oh, if someone's feeling anxious right now, the question could be this: what is everything there is to notice in this moment that is not that feeling? So let me give you an example. What's everything there is to notice in this moment that is not this conversation?
Yeah. Oh, well, I can hear the cat toy going around in the back. I can hear all sorts of other things, you know, whoever knows, like whatever else is going on back here, a bit of a mess.
When you shift your attention back to include those things, does it take attention away from here?
Absolutely. It's like, you can't focus. You
can't focus.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be nice if we couldn't focus on that problem anymore? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, absolutely.
To the point where we get angry and go, Craig, I can't do this anxiety if you keep distracting me like this. Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it can be about shifting the attention to include other things, because we only have so many attention units. Let's say people can pay attention to between 5 and 9 things at the same time. When someone's really anxious, those 5 to 9 are filled with whatever the problem is. So if we can become absorbed in anything but that, then that is no longer active in the system.
Yeah.
That's number one. Another thing would be to say that if we can link the feel, if we can give an example, would be if we could take the feeling and really look and say, what is a feeling? A feeling comes down to a sensation in the body. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, it's got to start somewhere.
Right. So if you're anxious and I was to say to you, how do you know you're anxious? People would say, I feel it. So where do you feel it? Go, I don't know. Then how do you know you're feeling it? Well, I feel it. But yeah, but where? I don't know. Then how do you know you're feeling it? Oh, well, actually, I have this heaviness in my chest. And then we can say, if we can give that any qualities to the feeling, then if we manipulate the qualities, we change the feeling. So an example would be if someone was to say, I feel like I have this, all of this weight on my chest. And a simple one to do is color. Like we'd say, if I ask you a question and I want you to give me your very first answer and say, if that feeling had a color, what color would it be? If we then change the color, we change the feeling.
Yeah.
I can tell you why. Because our subconscious, we typically, there's a step that's missing a lot of the time where we want to change a feeling. Like people might be anxious and I'll say, how do you stop that? And they go, well, I tell myself, don't be anxious. Because when you tell yourself, don't be anxious, you're mentioning anxiety. So you keep re-triggering it.
Yeah.
So we say the body, the subconscious doesn't know how to not feel anxious. Terrible instruction.
Yeah.
But if we can say, well, actually, this anxiety is like this red, angry ball of fire. And we say, if we could identify it as that. But, and by the way, the language of the subconscious is emotion and imagination. So if we can get into the realm of imagination and hook an emotion to it, then what we do in the imagination changes the emotion. So we're associating a feeling with something. It's a color, a shape, an object. And we then, like Melissa Tier stuff, we'd remove it, change that. And it's great too, because people don't think we're talking about the feeling. What do you mean we're working on this red angry ball? What do you mean? So we work on that. And the way to test it is say, well, if you make it bigger, what happens to the feeling? Well, it gets worse. But for some people, it gets smaller. If you expand it, it's weird. So then the interesting thing is that's how we test it. So if we could remove that feeling, how does our mind represent it? If it had a color, what color would it be? If it had a temperature? So basically we're giving life, we're hooking the feeling to whatever this thing is. And then when we resolve that, we actually resolve this.
Yeah.
And it blows people's minds. They're like, but we're talking about this, aren't we?
Yeah.
But that's how the subconscious does things. Now, actually, if you listen to it, to maybe come at it from this angle, if we listen to what people say, people give us clues all the time. People will say, I'm tired of dragging this weight around. What weight? Where is it?
Yeah.
I don't see it. Oh, it's just a figure of speech. It's not a figure of speech. It means that's how their subconscious perceives it. What would it be like to drop that weight, you know? Oh, I feel great. You know, like, what would it give you permission to feel if you let go of that? And then people, you could do that in a conversation. That's hypnosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like looking at it and saying that, also people would say, I'm tired of, you know, I'm tired of this person looking, talking down to me. And meanwhile, maybe you're taller than them. So how do they talk down to you if you're taller than them? Oh, it's a figure of speech. And what is that telling you? That their mind is representing the other person as bigger than them.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that they have power, because in our mind, typically what is above us has power. What is beneath us, we have power over it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of like matches into like, you know, child and parent dynamics,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Yes. So authority figure is bigger enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how years later, even if you're bigger than a parent, you might feel they're the authority, because it was coded the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they say that comes from it in the days of if we were primordial ooze, that the first element of our consciousness was spatial awareness.
Hmm.
So actually the idea that we realized that things that were closer were more powerful than the things that were further away.
Hmm.
The things that were higher were more powerful than the things that were lower.
Hmm.
Right? So almost like saying, if you imagine, if there's something you're scared of, like say a snake, if the snake was right here, would the intensity be different than if it was 100 yards down the street? Yeah, sure it would.
Yeah.
So it's almost like what one thing that we don't realize too is that our mind stores information. Here's a weird one to tell you. Like imagine there's a filing cabinet for where we store our thoughts, and not necessarily our thoughts, our feelings, our associations. And it's actually in the space around us.
Mm-hmm.
So our mind almost projects stuff into the space around us and then reacts to it. So when someone says, when I think of the boss, I'm tired of, you know, her talking down to me, it means that they have a file for the boss and it's above them. So they're like, so they interact with it and they go, I wish this would change. This thing that I've made up and put here, I wish it would change.
Yeah.
Well, who would do that for us? Who's the secretary?
Yeah.
Well, I'm the secretary. So if I can't change it, who could? I just need someone to point out that that's what's going on.
Yeah.
And okay. I know I'm jumping into a lot of stuff here. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love it.
Take that file, put it on the ground, push it further away and put it behind us. The feeling changes.
Yeah. 100%.
The stuff that's behind us is deactivates in our system.
Yeah.
The stuff that's in front of us is active in our system.
Yeah.
Why? From survival, what's in front of me, I should be paying attention to. Once it's behind me, it's done.
Yeah.
Not always true though, because sometimes in life there's stuff behind us we're not looking at. But it's about looking at and saying simply that when people say I want to put it behind me, you know what they're saying? They actually want to deactivate it in their system. They actually want it behind them.
Yeah.
So this upcoming thing that's bothering me, there is a piece though, if someone's listening to this and they try that and it doesn't work, the only reason that we won't be able to do that is if there's something that our subconscious needs us to learn or understand or remember that makes it safe to let go of it. Because survival again. Yes. So if for survival, and what if an emotion is only a messenger? Then we just say, well, what's the message inside of that? And when we get that, then we can let it go. If we ignore the message, kind of like some of the things people come to work on, there's actually something that needs resolved.
Yeah.
So like, I don't want to feel anxious. I go, maybe there's a reason we should.
Yeah. Well, and that's like that that idea of like, what's the positive intention behind whatever this feeling, thought, action.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Yes.
And it's interesting because you say, and it makes sense, right? Like if something is close to us, like, you know, if it's a snake that's like right there in front of us, it's worse than if it's far away, right? Behind a cage all the way away. But then another thing that I think of is like with feelings, because I suppose rather than, and maybe I don't know if this is the reason why, but I guess the feelings are our own. So if we try and push them away, I find that that makes them more powerful. Does that?
Like, yeah, what you resist persists, right?
What's that?
What you resist persists.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, you're right. But behind every feeling, there is a positive intention. So almost like, another way to look at that is to say that everything that is a current problem was a perceived former solution.
Everything that is a current problem.
Yep. Right. So an example, if we look at the snake, if you saw a snake and were terrified and you thought it might bite you, so your mind then associates, I have a feeling in my body, and what's in my awareness when I have that feeling? There's a snake. So they in the brain, you've got a feeling. And then the mind is looking to understand, why am I feeling this? There's a snake. They become connected. There becomes a link, a neural link. So then later on in another situation, you see the snake. And because there was a link built, it fires the feeling.
Right.
So then later on, years after the event, like it happens again. Why? Because it was a solution to, there was a potential perceived threat. So the solution is to notice and record and make a program of avoid that, which is a solution to I felt in danger. So then later on, when it comes up, you might go, it's not appropriate anymore because I work in a zoo. And go, oh right, shit. So the so we go, this is such a problem. This is so stupid. But meanwhile, the subconscious is saying, hey, wait. This gave us an improved chance of survival. So why are you telling me it's a problem? So it was a perceived solution to a perceived problem. At one time. Does that mean it was a good solution? No. Does it mean a solution was actually needed? No. But also remembering as well, the subconscious isn't logical. It will make a decision, and it might not make sense to the logical mind. That's often when you unpack things for people, they're like, it's so weird that I decided that. Because that's conscious analysis of an unconscious, illogical process.
And that's interesting, like that kind of duality between the conscious and the unconscious mind. Like we have this, I think a lot of times we, there's like a lot of focus on that, like conscious willpower in kind of like society these days. It's like kind of, you know, logical thinking and like, you know,
that's what I was saying in the beginning. Maybe we weren't on air yet about that, but this idea that we love feeding that beast, the conscious. Like every trying to figure it out, like information. And we go, if it worked though, nobody would struggle with their weight unless it was a health concern, you know, hormonally or something. Nobody would struggle with you know, addictions. Everybody would be remarkably wealthy because all the information is there. And it's interesting, in a time of a never seen before wealth of information, that certain problems are getting worse, like anxiety. Isn't it interesting? We've never had more information. It's never been easier to get information. But then it's that other part about what that information pleases the conscious. And that's what I was talking about before. So when people say knowledge is power, no, because the knowledge doesn't fix anything. If we apply that knowledge, like people might say, oh, I know how, and I know you meditate, right? I know how to meditate. I read all about it. So, but are you doing it? Well, I'm not doing it. So that's why you don't get the benefits. But I know how to do it. Like I read about it. Like I have all the information. It's all over here. All of these are about that. So I've done that already. And go, but did you get the experience? Well, no, no, I don't need that because I have the information. But it's not like that. So the subconscious part is about the language of it, as I think about it, is imagination and emotion, right? And it's experiential. So it's almost like the conscious mind is the observer of the experience, but the subconscious is having the experience. And sometimes the clash for people can be that, particularly with anxiety, that if something happens in their body that they can't logically understand, they freak out.
And I don't think that there's a lot of kind of discussion about that type of thing, right? Like I can remember, like think back to going through school and even like, you know, home life, child, family, all like in all the experiences, it's not until entering this world where it's like, oh, you're talking about feelings having colors and textures and all these different things. And then, oh, wait, if I change them, move them around, I'm going to feel differently. And to the logical mind, it's like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, there's no colors. Wait, is there a color? There is a color, right? So then I think it's great to have that kind of, like, let's go a little bit deeper into that, like that unconscious, like how can we explore that? Or how would you usually kind of present, like, okay, like there's this unconscious part of you and you need to get more in touch with. What do you think is the first step?
Well, what's the first step? What I would say is,
where would you start?
Where would I start? I think an interesting place to start is to recognize that every emotion, well, actually, by the way, there's a difference between an emotion and a feeling. An emotion happens at the subconscious level, where we see, imagine the snake, right? So the snake example I gave, the emotion is the mind, the subconscious sees, because all of information goes through the subconscious first. And then some of it rises up into our conscious awareness, but most of it doesn't. So we see the snake, and then our mind links the snake to what we experienced it before. So then the emotion is that result of that, and that's subconscious. So then the brain and the body release certain chemicals that we might call anxiety. So we feel how those chemicals in our brain and body, that we feel them. And that is a feeling, but we will label that anxiety.
Yeah.
The emotion came before it. So the emotion is almost the one that changes the valves and causes things to flow differently. Then we feel the flow and we label, that's the actual feeling. So it comes down to every single emotion is actually a sensation.
Yeah.
It's a sensation. So the more we can get in touch with that, we recognize we don't have to change the logic. We have to change the sensation.
Yeah.
And I give you an example of that. If someone was feeling cold and you had them close their eyes and you had to imagine them being out on, you know, being out in the desert on a hot summer day and there's not a cloud in the sky and the sun is beating down on them relentlessly and they can feel the heat of the sand beneath them, you can actually, they can produce that feeling. So in terms of getting, to answer your question, where would people get started? It would be about looking at it and saying that where their attention is going is creating feelings in their body. So by moving their attention, they change the feelings in their body. So often we make it that we have to, and it's back to what you were saying, we often have come at it from the we're making decisions to please the logical mind, but it isn't the logical mind that makes us feel good.
Yeah, it starts somewhere else. It starts in the
subconscious. And also an interesting, that brings up something deeper, head versus heart. The heart's the one that will have us be happy, not the head. And then people then at that point typically say, so I'm just going to walk around all in my feelings and not do anything that makes sense. And you go, no, we're going to have balance. So it means to say that, and actually here's another conversation. That in your brain, you have neurons. You have neurons in your heart as well. And you have neurons in your gut. So the gut processes feelings of fear mentally, emotionally, and identity wise. That's why if someone's going to speak on stage, they get butterflies in their stomach. Why? Because it's an identity thing. Fear. Heart wise, you know, why does someone say my heart's not in it? Why would your heart be in it? What's your heart got to do with it? It's like, well, when I think about that person or that situation, there's nothing in my heart. Well, that means you don't care about it. And then the mind might go, but I should care about it. Go, but you don't. Or so, like when someone's thinking about options, they're at a crossroads. And you go, I just wish I knew which one, which was, I just wish I knew the path of my heart. And you go, well, have you asked your heart? And they go, well, you can't do that. So it's funny, there's a lot of things in our language that are actually true, but we think they're bullshit. You could ask your heart, which way is the right way to go? If you imagine both outcomes and then, you know, pay attention to what you're feeling here, what do you notice? And it's an interesting thing that, and anyway, but let us down a rabbit hole there. But the idea being as well that that we basically have to know how to operate our system better. Because we tend to come at it all from the conscious mind and trying to figure it out.
So exactly what you said then, it's all about balance.
And realizing that everything that people have ever come to me to work on, and anything everyone could ever want to feel routinely in their life comes down to one statement. And here's the gold piece for you. Their habits of attention. That is it. The people who are very happy in their life are habitually paying attention to different things or through a different lens than the people who are unhappy. I'll give you an example. Richard Branson didn't go to college. But I remember seeing an interview where there was some business graduate that interviewed him and said, Richard, it was interesting that looking at your career, how at this point, and this point, you didn't seem aware or to consider or give much power to that this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. And he said, oh, wow, no, I didn't. And you know what? If I had a thought of that about that, maybe things would have been different. And the guy's like, well, yeah, there you go. And I'm thinking, no, it worked out good. The fact he didn't consider all of those things and just focused on what he wanted and just did what he wanted, that's probably why he got the outcome, rather than to say, let me just instead dwell in the threats.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean threats aren't important. No. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like with our logical mind, sometimes we chop things up, and this is for the logical people out there. Yeah. When you chop the goal into small enough pieces, there's nothing left in it. Meaning that if we say, I want that thing, well, actually, you know what? Let me go this angle with you. Choose versus decide. Is there a difference?
Choose versus decide. It seems like there is.
Decide. I may have remembered this incorrectly, but I think it comes from the Latin word decide, which means to cut away other things or everything else. So decide is basically like if you apply filters or criteria. To decide means after applying all of your logic, all of your reasonings, all of your rationale, then what you decide upon means what's left. Choose means to choose freely without those considerations. So the way that I talk to clients about this is, do you like ice cream, Jonathan?
Yeah.
So imagine you go into an ice cream store. So funny you say, of course, there's always the odd person that's like, no. Like, oh, okay. So imagine you go into an ice cream store and they have 100 flavors and you look at those flavors and then we start applying rules. We're like, well, actually, I'm off sugar right now. You know, that's got nuts. I don't want to do nuts. You know, and then that 100 becomes one. Like when all of the criteria are satisfied, it's one and it's engine oil flavor. And like, oh God, look at me. I'm eating this engine oil flavored ice cream and I don't like this. How did it get here? Yeah. That's decide. Right. Choose is to say there's 100. Like, what do I like? You know, oh, I like Rocky Road. But why? Because it's what I like. So I choose that one. Why do I choose it? Because it's what I choose.
Yeah.
But there's, you can't just choose what you want, can you? Yes, I choose that one because it's what I want. So we have to then look at it and say, many people are deciding upon what they can do. And that the goal almost becomes like when you're a kid and you're excited, you're like, I'm going to do this thing. And then it's about, well, you got to get a stable job. You got to get a good education. So you get a stable job. So you can do the job that you probably don't want to do, but you can do it long enough that one day eventually you can then choose what you want to do when you're like 65 or so.
Yeah.
And we go, there seems something wrong with that.
Yeah.
Does it mean though the other extreme is to just live free in the world, living off nuts and berries in the woods? No, probably not. But it's about looking at it and saying that, am I choosing or am I deciding? And it's funny how sometimes people might say, here's what where I want to go on vacation, right? And then like saying, oh, but you know what? Well, yeah, actually, when you consider this and you consider this and consider this, consider this, I guess I'll just have a half day of work and we'll sit at home. Okay. It's like, well, we're choosing that or deciding on it.
Yeah.
And then back to what I was saying earlier, and that's where we get a little bit spiritual. If we actually choose it, what if we live in a reactive universe and think forces begin to align themselves to support that choice? Where if we actually decide something, then what are we actually asking for? We're not asking for anything because we've settled on this is it. Choosing almost means to communicate. Yeah. And remember we said before, our brain is a transmitter and receiver of information. Vibrational data, which is a whole other conversation we can go into there. But then looking at it and saying, well, if we live in a reactive universe, when I choose it, things begin to move to satisfy that.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the idea that many people think that I sit on my ass and one day someone comes and rings my doorbell and said, there's what you chose. But it means that, imagine like that we have to meet whatever this is in this reactive universe. What if we have to meet it halfway? Meaning I have to give life to it in my mind. And the way I would explain that is to say, if I can, in my mind, feel an emotion in connection with that thing that I want, and then begin to take steps in that way, I think we get met in the middle, not a step more, not a step less, met in the middle. Where many people think, I thought of it once and nobody came at my door and gave it to me, so it must not be real.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's another rabbit hole that I've led us down. But basically this idea about choosing a goal rather than settling for what we don't even want. and then not being happy when we get it, but it's what we asked for.
Yeah.
While I went in the steak, when I went in the restaurant and ordered steak, the way I ordered the steak, the waitress or waiter should have known I wanted chicken. Why didn't they know that? They should have known. It's ridiculous. Or even worse, here's another graphic one, but I think stories help us to remember points.
Yeah.
If you go into a restaurant and they say, what do you want? And you go, anything but the steak. I just don't like steak. Anything but that. If the waiter came back with a plate of dog shit, they've honored the request.
Yeah.
They've honored the request. It could, like, this is a disgrace. You didn't listen to me. Go, oh, I actually did listen to you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be easier to say, I'll have the barbecue chicken. I'll have a half chicken. I'll have a side of sweet potato fries and I'll have some broccoli, right? That's what I want. Then that, oh, well, that's what I choose.
Yeah.
As I decided, well, anything but this. And then I'm like, oh, I don't even like this food. Why am I eating this food? I don't want this.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I love that distinction. It's something I've never actually thought about, the difference between deciding something and then choosing it. So it's, And I guess in a way, if you think about it, sometimes making that choice can be scary.
Yep. But then what I would say about that, Jonathan, is the idea that we have to stop relating to our decisions as life ending. You know, because it's true. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, we tend to think, if I choose this, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
And then I love these questions.
Yeah.
What if we are? What if we are?
Yeah.
And then it's back to what I said about the movie. Oh, well, then it would be the end.
Yeah.
Like, we'd be stuck in a moment forever.
Yeah.
It's like, would you though? But yet, great. But then what happens after that? Oh, well, then I feel embarrassed. Great. And then what? Oh, well, then I've got to figure something else out.
Yeah.
Great. And then what? Well, then I look at options. Great. And then what? Well, then I find one. Great. And then what? Well, then I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you're doing something else over there, what's important then? Oh, well, I wasted that time. And go, well, could you have got there without that? Well, no, because I'd always have wondered.
Yeah.
And that's another thing we want as human beings too, that gets in our way. We want the benefit of the experience without the experience.
Right.
So I want to choose the thing that I know will work out from experience before I have the experience.
Yeah.
So we have to let experience be our ultimate teacher.
Yeah.
Not logic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tough one because we don't want to waste time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, can you tell me if I will enjoy being a pharmacist? Tell me if I will enjoy it, not you, never mind what you're doing, but like, tell me if I will enjoy it. And then if you convince me whether I will enjoy it, and I believe that, then I'll do it. But meanwhile, it's like, well, wait a minute. That's a tall order, that one.
Yeah.
How do you know if I'll like it? And even if I were to, I might not be where you do it and doing it in exactly the way that you do it. I might be doing it in a hospital.
Yeah.
Versus a CVS versus, I don't know, somewhere else. And they might all be different.
Yeah.
So it's with different people. Yeah. So you're like, it's not comparable.
Yeah.
We want to ultimately be willing to fail forward as well, by the way.
Yeah. Fail forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what if I know? And what have I taken? What if it spectacularly backfires?
Mm-hmm.
What then?
Yeah.
We survive. Again, back to survival.
Yeah.
Start with that. Is it a survival event? Do I survive it? Yes. Okay. And we find out it's mostly always just a discomfort issue.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it at the time, but it's discomfort. What if the worst that could ever happen is discomfort that you survive?
Yeah.
That changes a bit.
And like, to your point about like the wasting time thing, where it's like, and then it's like, oh, I couldn't.
But we waste time while trying to figure it out.
But then it's like, you won't figure it out unless you spend that time. So then it's time not wasted in a way.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's about, I guess, your attention then.
Yes.
How you choose to look at things.
Right. Yes. And looking at it and saying that, I was going to go with something there about the what you said about experience there. Well, also, actually, another priority of the mind other than survival is being right.
Right.
So we don't want to risk being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do anything.
Yeah.
And then we're wrong anyway. Actually, by the way, I don't know if I said this to you. I might have. End of a long day. I might not have said this. but I was saying it to clients today. What if your mind is nothing but a search engine like Google? Mm-hmm. What if it's nothing more than that? So if I put into Google, why is the world shitty? There's like 4 billion results. Are they all wrong? Mm. Mm. But if I just flip the question, what if the world's a beautiful place? And there's millions of answers. Are they all wrong? A lot of people on either side are lying, right? So why are there like millions of people lying about this?
Yeah.
It's like, are they both true? Maybe they're both true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, actually, for changing how people feel, that's when we go back to what we said before, asking a better question. Because basically, if you imagine what you're experiencing right now is an answer to a question, you might not know what the question is. Mm-hmm. But an example, I feel horrible now, right now, for instance, as an example. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel horrible right now. It's just an example. Yeah. But like, so if someone was to say, well, I failed this exam today. And then, so then the mind then is like, the subconscious question is, what does this mean? And it needs an answer. So I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Go, well, what's a better question? What does this mean? What else could this mean? I'll have to study harder next time because I was out drinking last night. No. Oh. Well, then what is different about it if then we can say that it's just feedback? And if I take that feedback and modify something, could the outcome be different next time?
Yeah.
Yeah. What if the... So another couple of themes, because they just keep coming here. Tell me if it's too much here.
Nice. So I'll go wherever you take me.
What if the world what if nothing has any meaning at all whatsoever except the meaning we give to it? None. Zero. Mm. Except the meaning we give to it. What's the opportunity with that?
Mm. Oh, it's limitless.
Mm. Yeah. So we'll say, well, no, obviously you'd think, okay, I failed that exam, so it means I'm stupid. Go. Does it though? What else could it happen? Does it mean it means that you did what you did and here we are? Mm-hmm. So the opportunity is to do differently. Yeah. And maybe we go somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's like saying I walked down the street and didn't find myself in Korea, so this mustn't work. Go, well, then you'd look and say, well, am I going the right direction? Can I tell that much? Yeah. Well, yes. And go, well, then maybe I have to increase the distance, change direction, or ideally find another mode of transport because it'd be very difficult without it. Yeah. And look at it and say, it's ultimately looking and saying, like, you know, in the GPS, sometimes you'll drive and it thinks you're facing one way, but you're not, and it turns you around. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it happens a lot with Waze, I find. So that looking at and saying that, what if the world is just giving us never ending feedback, and it's not good, it's not bad, it's not right, it's not wrong, it's just feedback.
Yeah.
Then we have, if we listen to that feedback, not from a perspective of making something again, right, wrong, good or bad, just this is what it is, and I accept that and modify or just give up.
Yeah.
If I eat 5,000 calories a day and gain weight, what's the feedback? I'm eating too many calories.
Yeah.
What's the opportunity? Well, reduce them. Yeah, but what if I cut that in half and I'm still gaining weight? Great question. Modify again.
Yeah.
Or increase the activity.
Yeah. Just do something else.
Yes, there's not a place where I'm just here and this is what it is and something's making it this way and that's it. Like, we like these places of powerlessness, but they're made up. Mm-hmm. I have no choice but to feel this way and go, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like there's no way off the hook.
Yeah. So is it a choice or a decision to give up that power then for some of people in that situation?
Well, choice would need, in my opinion, well, actually, no, both of them would require an awareness. Typically, I would say decision, because it means that if people are aware of other possibilities, they have invalidated those possibilities or they haven't met their criteria. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't possibly do that. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yeah. Oh, I couldn't possibly, like cigarettes. Someone's addicted to cigarettes. They go, well, it's the nicotine, right? So I couldn't just stop because the nicotine is making me smoke. It's not a choice or decision. That's a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. So decide less and choose more.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Really cool, man. But a weird thing is about, but the conditions that people put in there when they're deciding, here's the sticky part. They'll go, no, those criteria need to be there.
Hmm.
But then we look and go, well, if the options we're left with aren't very pleasing, like flights, It's another good example. You're looking at flights. You're like, oh, wow, there's thousands of flights. Like, I'll go back to Scotland where I'm from. Like, oh, there's so many flights. Oh, but I don't want a red eye. So that half of them are gone. Oh, but, you know, I don't want a layover. Or have them gone. And I go, well, I don't like that flight, but that's all that's left. I guess that's what I don't want to do that. Maybe I'll just not take the trip. I go, maybe I just take the filters off and be willing to say that maybe I don't have to decide this is the only option. And then go with, be a bit more flexible. Mm-hmm. And maybe I can get what I want in a slightly different package.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So we are always applying filters. We're like, there's what I'm left with.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm left with. Says who?
Yeah. We like to put a structure to the world and all of that and kind of quote unquote make sense of it.
So, well, that's a safety thing.
Yeah.
That's back to survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then and then here's the total mindfuck questions. What's everything that's not that? So we go, this is all that's left. This is what I must do. Mm-hmm. But what's everything that's not that?
Yeah.
You know? So it's the questions like that are great because it's about how do we expand our consciousness to include new information? And about safety, this is one of the things that I think that as human beings, we are just really a series of patterns. Mm-hmm. And you know, you sent me before that, the Serrano AI thing from Scott Sandlin, where we look at it now and say that, you know, we're way more predictable than we think. We are a series of patterns. Mm-hmm. But we believe our patterns are really complicated and really unique and that they're the truth. So it's interesting where our mind is kind of creating this matrix idea for us and we believe it. But part of us knows it's nonsense, but it's hard to consider what's everything that's not that matrix that I've made for myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh man, if I really am good enough, shit, then I have to think about, well, damn, I've got to make some changes in my life if I'm really good enough.
Yeah.
Damn it. And then I have to really think about the past choices I made and where could I be now? Oh man. That's like, feels like leaving my island of safety.
Yeah.
It's not a happy island and it needs a bit of work.
Yeah.
But it's very familiar.
Yeah.
And there's a comfort to that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like that interesting thing about if we can envision something different and create a sense of safety around it and familiarity around it in our mind and then take small steps to it so that the discomfort never gets too big.
Yeah.
And we can have a clear why about why we want to do it. We can do it. If those things are missing, then why would we do it?
Yeah, there'd be no reason to. That's amazing.
And actually, when setting a goal, here's an interesting twist on an old question. Which question feels better to you? Here's a question. In 10 years, where would you like your life to be? There's one question. Here's the second one. In 10 years, if you knew you absolutely could not fail, what would you go for and where would you like your life to be? Are they different questions?
Oh, absolutely.
So the first one triggers what? A sense of, well, what could, it's the decide again.
Yeah.
It's like, right. Oh, well, what's survivable?
Yeah.
What would take a lot of energy? What's uncomfortable? And then, so I have to definitely, I might not survive that mentally, emotionally, physically. So that's gone. That would be uncomfortable. So that's gone. That would take a lot of energy. That's gone. So in 10 years, I'd like to be 5 yards ahead of where I am now.
Yeah.
Rather than the other one is like, shit, well, if I'm going to definitely survive, it's definitely going to be comfortable in the end. And it doesn't matter how much energy it takes. Well, now that we're talking, that's the choose part again.
Yeah.
Because those criteria are gone.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing there about that scenario of like in 10 years, okay, where would you be? And you're trying to decide and you're saying, this will happen, that'll happen. And then this other thing will happen. None of those things have actually happened to you.
Right.
Say that it's a stopper. It's a block. The only thing that's happened is you're saying that it's going to happen. So I can't.
Well, here's another golden nugget for you then. So when you give life to those things in your mind, does it matter that they're not actually real? Cause our emotions react to them anyway. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a golden piece for the listeners, right? Here's a golden piece. We're not in a relationship with anyone or anything in the world. Mm. We're in a relationship with our perceptions of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter if it actually happens. If I perceive that it could, I react to it anyway.
Yeah.
Or if I say, Jonathan, you are this, this, and this. Why? Say I have a perception of you, for instance. Then why is that great? Because I don't have to be present to who you are that's not that. So what if you are just this stream of data coming my way? And my mind is like, oh, it's exhausting trying to figure that out. What labels can I give Jonathan? Oh, he's a pharmacist. He's a guy. Here's where he lives. Great. Then I just then my subconscious just back to sleep again. You're just predefined.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you could really do something that convinces me to change that, but without that, I've already figured you out and all that. Well, that's when you hear people say, "Oh, I can't figure this person out." What does that mean?
Yeah.
How do you figure all of them out?
Yeah.
So it's almost like this idea that our mind likes to just label and give like almost like an avatar to somebody. And then that is what we're reacting to. It's not actually you. And like people might say, oh, Jonathan's always this way. Is he?
Like always?
Even when he's sleeping? Oh, well, obviously not then. Oh, so we've already got a crack in it. What about like on one of his really best days? Is he like that? Well, not those days. Well, no. Okay. What about when he's really focused on something? Well, not then either. It's like, well, wait a minute, but he's always that way. And then the mind's like, oh, well, I don't want to think about all the times he's not. That's hard. I'd have to be conscious to that. I don't want to be conscious to that because it can, and the priorities of the mind, that burns energy. I don't want to burn energy.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating.
So it's almost like this idea that, well, if I change my perception of you, then guess what actually happens? My communication to you would change and your perception of me would change. So if someone's got a really bad boss, if they actually change their perception of the boss, and this isn't saying they're wrong, that's not the point of what I'm saying, but if they change the perception, then they are reacting differently to that. They communicate differently to that person then. And that person then sees them differently and the relationship changes. Meanwhile, we haven't asked that person to do anything.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? And to go deeper within that, the people that you feel best spending time with, the people that make you feel better, here's what's happening. They are communicating with an image of you or a perception of you that's better than the one you hold for yourself. Boom. When you feel shitty around certain people, they're communicating to a version of you or reality that's less than what you see. So they're talking to that and it's feeding you or draining you. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, it's fascinating.
So it's all the perception.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Craig, I understand that. But it's no, I'm really with how they are. And you go, wow, yes, so you're like a supercomputer monitoring all of those billions of bits of data every single moment. You're aware of that? Yeah. Oh, I don't need to be. But I'm not like that, Craig. I don't have a perception. I'm with the truth. I'm realistic.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
No, we're not.
Yeah. What's real anyways?
Reality is what you perceive it to be. Because if you think about it, if information was outside of, because all of our senses are sensors. And actually, if you think about this, do you see with your eyes or do you see through your eyes? Which one is it? Where is your vision constructed?
In the brain.
In the brain. So you don't even see with your eyes, you see through them. Is it your brain? Is it your ears that actually process the sound or do they just receive it?
Yeah.
So a little part of your brain takes all of that, runs it through your experiences of life so far, especially the first few years of your life where you kind of learned like tactile, like what is everything? And then that data gets run through those filters and massively compressed and made into like a you could call it a simulation, right? Where it's all of that data gets put into a model of what this is. And I'm going, why don't you understand it? We're looking at the same fucking picture. Why don't you get it, Jonathan? It's like, well, I'm looking at one thing and I'm like, no, I'm not just looking at this. This is how it is.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at it going, what's he doing? This is how it is. And like, no, but you don't understand this. Mine's right.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're doing, but mine's right. Why don't you know what's going on here? And it's like, well, our brain, how could it make the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you think those moments where we agree about something, people will look at something and go, yeah, what about this? And I'm like, yeah. But meanwhile, I often think, I bet they have completely different images.
Oh, 100%.
I was like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Right. Oh. So it's so this idea that actually it is all just made up anyway. It's all just data that actually, what if that data doesn't have any meaning? But the biggest illusion is that it does. Mm-hmm. So what if we only give meaning to things in a way that empowered us?
Yeah. Fascinating. And that would probably, and let's end on this point. That last point that you made would be the kind of thing that keeps you going into the existential dread, right? It's like, oh, everything is meaningless and there's nothing except what you give meaning to that empowers you. I think that little distinction just really changed the whole picture. I was going to ask you about that, but you dropped it in there. So
yep.
Like you read my mind.
Yep. And like the Native Americans used to say, one of the tribes used to say, there's at least, is it 9 or 11 ways of looking at something?
Hmm.
And I thought, that's really interesting. Hmm. Change your perspective.
Yeah.
Actually, here's another piece. One more piece here. Let's do it. So to change a belief, right? If we introduce new information or a new perspective, that's what changes things. Mm-hmm. Why do people go to therapy? They want a new perspective.
Yeah.
And not just like someone to just tell them, but they want to integrate new information. Mm-hmm. So imagine any problem you've got is like a mathematical equation that is solved. So this and this equals not good enough. If we introduce new information, the equation can no longer balance itself in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So perspective is like everything.
Yeah.
So, and that meaning part, sure. We want to focus on meanings that empower us. Absolutely. Yeah. And, but by the way, to accept that an empowering perspective, people think, then I'd be kidding myself. But if we really analyze the limiting ones, what's the evidence that's true?
Yeah.
And I heard Melissa Teeter say, since you mentioned her name, it's all fucking made up. You're good enough? That's made up.
Yeah.
You're not good enough? That's made up.
Yeah.
Which one do you prefer? And I'm all for adding meaning in life, but again, in a way that empowers us. Because it's no less valid. Part of our mind's like, yeah, but I'd be kidding myself. Mm-hmm. We're already kidding ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Oh, thank you so much for spending this time with me to chat about all sorts of things, dropping nuggets on this little mining expedition that we've just went on. So you're based in which state again?
I'm in Tennessee now. I'm in Nashville.
Nashville, Tennessee. And I understand you work, is it mainly people online or?
All online, 100%.
All online. So where would people find you then?
FreedomHypnosisNYC.com is my website.
Awesome.
And on there, you know, people can schedule a call with me if they want to talk about their goals. Also, my information's on there if people just want to reach out. But FreedomHypnosisNYC.com. Awesome.
Amazing.
Also, on my YouTube too, there's like, I have some sessions I've put up there and some information about what hypnosis is. The YouTube channel is Freedom Hypnosis as well.
Awesome. So I will link to those in the show notes when this gets posted up and sent out into the wider world. And, you know, man, Craig, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing all that information. I definitely picked up some new perspectives there. So I really thank you for that. And it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Pleasure. Thank you for the invite. Time flies when you're having fun, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, I could do this all day.
Yeah, me too. I do.
Yeah.
And now that you've made it all the way through to the end, I want to thank you so much for tuning in and listening, sticking out all the way to the end. Check out more from me at curateandupgrade.ca. These podcasts will be coming out at some interval. I don't know when, but please subscribe. Check it out if you thought it was interesting. And I would love to hear from you. So please find me on social or wherever. I don't really know. I'm just happy that this got posted. So until next time, we will see you on the internet.